This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Purcell. Pulitzer Prize winning reporter David Finkel talks about his new book, Thank You for Your Service, detailing soldiers returning home from Iraq in about 15 minutes on Cincinnati Edition. Right now, as a continuation of the Big Idea Challenge, the Greater Cincinnati Foundation, a look at a project that's looking to improve our community by planting trees. A lot of trees. Taking Root, a tree planting campaign, won the Environmental Stewardship category, the Big Idea Challenge. Joining me in the studio are a couple of the organizers of Taking Root, Liz Jacobs, Plant Health Manager at Natorps, and Scott Buerlein, horticulturalist from the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden and chair of Taking Root. Well, welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you have a question for Liz or Scott about Taking Root, you can pass it along by calling 513-419-7100, emailing talk at WVXU.org, posting on Facebook, or by tweeting at 917WVXU. Well, to begin with, I want to ask you to give me an elevator pitch for Taking Root and what you're trying to do with this project.
Primarily, we're trying to raise awareness of the good that trees do for our communities and for our environment. And sort of to highlight that, to draw attention to it, we're planting trees. We're planting a lot of trees, 2 million by 2020. That's our goal. In fact, it's actually, we're encouraging everyone else to plant 2 million trees. We have no intention of doing it ourselves. It's something that we want the community to get wrapped around to realize, you know, the many good things that trees do for us and the threat that our trees are under right now from exotic pests, insects, diseases, and also just human activity.
And that is it, Liz, is not only we just want to plant 2 million more trees, but recognizing that there are some threats to our forests here in the Cincinnati area right now.
That's exactly right. You know, as you either fly over town or drive through town, you see the rich forest heritage that we have here, but we kind of take it for granted. You know, it's been there a long time, but there's just been one pest after another, alien pests, to which our trees, they haven't co-evolved, so, you know, they don't have the defenses. And so we really need to, you know, grab the bull by the horns right now and get planting. We need to replace all those trees that we're losing so we don't lose this wonderful forest heritage we have.
And a lot of folks will look at the trees in Cincinnati and say, well, we got plenty of trees right now, not realizing that Cincinnati used to not really have a lot of trees at all. If you look at some of the historic photos at the Cincinnati Public Library or in history books, you'll see a picture of the cityscape, but you'll also see that there are no trees on the hills.
That's right. It's something I learned through early on in the process of starting Taking Root is that, you know, we all know by the mid-1800s, basically the United States or North America, for that matter, had pretty much been logged. It was only really the move to fossil fuels that sort of took pressure off of our forest to some degree. But what I didn't really know was that Cincinnati was a leader in establishing the whole reforestation movement of that time. So in the 1870s, John Warder, a local physician, sort of became aware and became concerned about the fact that the place was denuded of trees, started the American Forestry Congress, Association, American Forestry Association, the first time anybody on the continent had even talked about the fact that we were losing our forests. So they did that 7 years later, 1882, the first Congress, the American Forestry Congress, was held here in Cincinnati. 2 days later, all the school kids in Cincinnati were let off school to go plant trees on an abandoned vineyard up on Mount Adams. And we know that area now as Eden Park. So, and then 30 years later, in the early 1900s, played out farms on the west side of town were planted, 1 million trees by our leaders, and that's Mount Airy Forest. So you can go from nothing to something. We're actually something now, but we don't want to see it further eroded. We want to move and motivate people to plant trees. They do so much for us.
Well, Liz, I wanted to ask about, you know, these trees that have been planted and are a century old or a little more than a century old as they go along. They are healthy, but what is the lifetime of a tree? I know I have some big ones in my yard, but, you know, I know I see some skinny ones too. You know, working at Natorp's in the nursery there, when you get a small tree and you plant it in your yard, it takes a little while to get that big. But there is an end point to it too, right?
It does take a while, and it's highly variable depending on whether you're talking about a small ornamental tree, something like a redbud, which is one of our natives. They're still only going to be maybe a 20 or 30 year tree, as opposed to a maple, or you know, some of the climax trees in our forests like oaks. We were just down at Spring Grove this week and looking at a white oak that probably has been around 350, 400 years.
Wow.
So, you know, while some trees last that long, they don't all. And ash trees, they're one of the first to colonize, so they're also kind of one of the first in a forest to go away. And then the maples and the hickories and the oaks come behind. So there's a wide range of ages.
Liz Jacobs, she is the plant health manager at Natorp's. Scott Buehrlein in the studio with me as well, horticulturist from the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden, talking about Taking Root, a tree planting campaign, and the winner of the environmental stewardship category, the Big Idea Challenge, sponsored by the Greater Cincinnati Foundation. If you have a question for Liz or Scott about Taking Root, you can pass it along by calling 513-419-7100. Louise from Miami Heights is on the phone with a question. Good afternoon and welcome to Cincinnati Edition, Louise.
Hello there. How are you?
Not bad.
So I have several questions. I just heard them say that they don't intend to plant any trees themselves. They want other people to. I want to actually do some of the tree planting. I think it's vitally important that we do replace a lot of the dying trees that I see all around me. I don't have any more room in my yard. I want to, I'd be willing to donate trees and plant them. How do I get involved in a group that actually wants to do the planting is one question. Another question is, will they be putting on their website what trees to recommend that are going to be insect and drought resistant? And another question is, will they be planting any trees on public lands, or do they know of any group that will be planting trees on public lands or abandoned lots, or, you know, anything like that?
Oh, some good fodder there. A lot of questions.
Excellent,
Louise.
Questions.
Thank you for those. And I know on Cincinnati Edition a few weeks back, we were talking to some folks from the, I believe, Hamilton County Parks that were pairing with Duke Energy to plant in public right-of-ways some trees as they go along. But those were it. And those are some very valid questions. Let's begin with that first one about planting in public areas.
I was being a little facetious when I said we didn't have any intention. Our main goal is to get other people to plant trees, but we may pick up a grant here or there to go and do projects. We are putting together on our website, we will have a means very soon on how folks can donate money or trees or their planting time to go help somebody plant trees. So that's certainly something we intend to be a part of and do. As far as selecting trees, the correct trees, we do have links right now to plantplaces.com. Has a very good website on how to choose the proper tree for your site, where you can type in, I have clay soil, high pH, you know, dry sun, I want a 35-foot tree, put it in there, and you'll get a list of the trees that actually qualify for that site. So it's extremely helpful, plus a lot of photographs kind of give you an idea of what they look like.
Well, I wanted to ask you, Liz, about we talked about how there have been trees that are planted and reforested, and you were talking about, you know, some of the hickories and the oaks and the maples as they go along. What were the proper trees picked to reforest this area once it had, after the original deforestation? I mean, were there native trees planted? Were there trees that aren't so helpful planted?
I'm not sure I've ever seen the plan for Mount Airy Forest. In a natural sense, those things just happen. There are some species that move in and others that, you know, benefit from that initial shade and they come up behind. So there are definitely you have to look at the conditions that you have in your yard, and there are so many resources now, and that's part of what we want to do as Taking Root, is to really hone that website to help people make the good choices, so that they're getting. You don't want to put an oak that gets 80 feet wide in a lot that's only 60 feet wide. You know, right. It doesn't make for good neighbors. Our soils are highly variable around here, whether you're on the east side or the west side, or, you get up into Westchester, and I'm not sure we have soil up that way, but but you do need to choose the right plant for the right place.
It's interesting. Nature kind of sorts a lot of that out itself. So in a reforestation project, the bonehead trees that you shouldn't have decided in the first place don't make it very long at all. And then the correct ones, the good ones, do. And then they reach an age where they produce seed and then start to sort of start the whole succession process. In a yard setting, it's much more important to choose the right tree from the beginning, and try to get something that meets the site's needs and will last.
So did we answer all your questions there, Louise, or did you have any more?
Yeah, I'll be watching. I'm already on their email list, so I'll be watching for any planting opportunities and donation opportunities.
Well, thank you, Louise. And I wanted to ask, where you are planning on doing this. I live out in Claremont County. I know we've had an infestation of emerald ash borers, number one, beginning to eat away at the ash trees. And, of course, the Asian longhorn beetle has attacked there, and I presume those are the pests that you're talking about when you say we have some future tree loss that we'll experience.
Primarily, EAB, emerald ash borer, there's not much we can do about, so that's going to run its course here, and we'll lose our ash. Asian longhorn beetle is an entirely different insect. It's much worse in what it can do to a forest, but it's also eradicable. So everybody hopes and expects that the Claremont County infestation of Asian longhorn beetle will be gone within 5-10 years. So that's very different, from ash, where there's really no hope there. But
I want to ask you, Liz, as a plant health manager, I know you get lots of questions about the emerald ash borer.
Exactly.
Or how to protect the ash tree, too.
Right. And you have to decide what are those high-value trees, the ones that you want to treat, because you are going to buy into following this regime. Minimum every 2 years. Some treatments, they're saying, may go 3 years now. And you have to do that until, that beetle population crashes when there's no food around for them. So it's a commitment. You want to pick those high-value trees, the one that's giving you shade from the west, the one that's already, the kind of thing you need 50 or 60 years to grow. If it's a small tree, I don't know, this might be a good time for you to jump in with something else.
Was wondering, I'd like your advice about, picking the tree that counts, because I know I have a lot of ash in my area, and let's just say I couldn't afford to protect them all.
Exactly,
so,
right.
So you have to pick it as it goes along. Talking to Liz Jacobs and to Scott Buerlein about Taking Root, the tree planting campaign. You can call and ask your questions at 513-419-7100. And is there a certain tree that really dominates in this area? I mean, we've mentioned the maples and the oaks that everyone loves. I know there's a lot of sycamores around here as well, and ash, of course. Is there one that is predominant here in our area?
Not really. We live in a very diverse area, with a great rich diversity of trees. So if I had to pick one, it was probably ash,
right.
Unfortunately. Because we're at that stage in the succession cycle with our forests. I think with the loss of ash, we're going to move into a beech maple type of forest. So there's a lot of oaks out there, and there's a lot of hickory out there as well. The main trouble is with the deer populations where they are right now in many of our green spaces. There's not a lot of seedlings following along behind. So that could present a problem, or will present a problem. The other problem is a lot of invasive species out there that are filling the light gaps left behind by these ash. So, land managers and forest experts are going to need to do some work, and we may have to do something about the deer population.
Well, and that is, I mean, not only invasive insects, but invasive plants as well, I know are causing some trouble for our trees. Well, with taking root, is there an angle you're taking about recommending the particular trees or, you know, making sure the proper trees are put in the proper places? You've already, you know, mentioned that there will be a selection site that talks about soil and placement and, exactly, you know, sunlight and like. So will there be a top three that you're trying to get out there or anything?
No. And I think really another part of the campaign's emphasis is to connect people with the landscapers, the nurseries, the people who know what's good for this area. You know, it's great if you want to walk into your local box store. You may or may not find somebody there who can make good recommendations. And so there's so much that you can do to educate yourself, but there's a rich pool of information out there. I think, you know, people don't access.
Well, I'll flip it around then, because I know, I forget his first name, John Bradford, who developed the Bradford pear, has apologized for developing the Bradford pear because it's become so ubiquitous. Are there ones you'll recommend against when it comes to trees?
Well, definitely against the invasive species. And we will have lists of those out there on the website. They're not there now, but most of them, apart from the Bradford pear, are not really available to buy now anyway. But you know, what I wanted to express before regarding a top three list or something like that, we're not very interested in that at all. We want to, part of the whole idea here is to promote diversity of species.
Exactly.
We're lucky where we are. Our native flora is very diverse. We can grow a lot of other things, exotic plants that meet a wide range of different, you know, needs. And by having more a more diverse palette of trees to put in, we're going to be way better off if, you know, kind of, you know, the cities of the 30s, elms were planted in mass. That was the Bradford pear of its day. And so the Dutch elm disease comes along and wipes out huge numbers of trees. Those were followed by a lot of people put in silver maples because they kind of grew like an elm. And those were not suitable trees for street tree use and had to come out. You know, now we're looking at Bradford pears that everybody bought and put in. And they're falling apart, and if they're not, they're growing along every freeway in the county. So, you know, we should spread out our choices, and everybody should grow as many different things as we can.
We're talking about the Taking Root Tree Planting Campaign, one of the winners of the Big Idea Challenge in the category of environmental stewardship. You can talk to and ask questions at 513-419-7100. Just a few minutes left. And Carolyn asked, are there any trees that we can plant that would benefit honeybees since they are in trouble? You know, that's one benefit of trees, but also not only benefiting honeybees, but talk about the other benefits of trees.
Yeah, lindens be my first choice for honeybees right off the get-go. But again, a diversity is good because, you know, any plant is only in bloom for a few, maybe a week or 2 weeks. Having a wide diversity of material out there, trees and other plants that are in bloom through the full season are really what benefit all the pollinators for us. What was the second half of that question?
What are the other benefits of trees? I mean, why is taking root saying, you know, you mentioned at the very beginning, what you mentioned shade.
Right.
Of course, shade, you
exactly.
know, is one benefit.
I think we take trees for granted because they're just around there. You know, they're part of nature. But there are so many things that we're not aware that they do. And one of the best websites I've ever been to that can demonstrate this is the iTree calculator, and we'll get a link up there to that. And that very graphically, you know, you put in what kind of tree you have, so your maple tree in your backyard, what diameter it is, and it'll spill out all of the benefits from, you know, stormwater management to how much pollution this thing takes up to how much it's going to save you on your energy bill. I mean, it puts it all there in numbers. If you can't appreciate a tree just because it's a tree, you'll love it when you get done with the iTree calculator. So.
So where does Taking Root go from here? I know you had a big kickoff there in Eden Park where all those kids had planted those trees there in the Presidential Grove way back when. Where is Taking Root going from here now that you've won the Environmental Stewardship category and the Big Idea Challenge?
Well, we're working really hard right now to try to catch up our organization to everything that's happened. The momentum has just been unbelievable. So we're taking a month or two right now to try to develop our teams, get people on board, and in January, and we don't have a date yet, we're going to have a big tent meeting where we kind of open it up and let anybody come that wants to help out and be a part of it and choose teams and get on board and start the real work. And I think in the spring, and again, we don't have a date, we'll have a tree planting in Mount Airy sort of to replicate the start of that forest.
Well, it's some fantastic work going on here, and we have beautiful trees, but it sounds like we're going to have some more beautiful trees if Taking Root takes root. So, one more question. Marge, who lives north of town, says she has wet ground, has cedar trees. What would you recommend to replace the cedar trees?
Well, I think cedar is actually a pretty good tree for this region, and they're one of the colonizers. They come in and they improve really poor soil. So while you might want to get rid of some of those to improve your diversity, you certainly don't want to get rid of all of them. And when you look at something for wet soil, you usually want to look at the trees that grow in river bottoms. They're used to wet and compacted soils. So kind of depending on what area of town you're in.
Bald cypress.
Yeah, pin oaks.
Swamp white oak.
Some of the maples, the red maples, the Freeman maples.
Sycamore.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your information today, and best of luck with the Taking Root campaign, and best wishes for 2 million trees by the year 2020.
Thank you, Mark.
Liz Jacobs, Plant Health Manager at Natorp, Scott Buerlein, Horticulturalist from the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden, and both members of Taking Root, the tree planting campaign. Taking Root is a collaborative, broad-based campaign addressing the current historic loss of the region's tree canopy by trying to plant trees, and you can learn more about them through our website, wvxu.org, and link to their website that's under development. And you can learn more about what trees you might want to plant.